You're listening to the Talking Rheumatology Spotlight Podcast, brought to you by the British Society for Rheumatology.
Hello, and welcome to this Spotlight Podcast on JIA, hosted by the British Society for Rheumatology. My name's Chris Winkup, and I'm a consultant rheumatologist based at King's College Hospital in London. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Rachel Tattersall, a consultant adolescent rheumatologist based in Sheffield. In this interview, we discuss the treatment landscape of JIA in the UK and consider a number of the biologic drugs that are available for young patients with this condition.
The first question was really, what would you say are the main differences between JIA and adult onset inflammatory arthritis that listeners should be aware of?
So I suspect what people don't always appreciate is that JIA, terrible name, juvenile, onset before the age of 16, idiopathic, we don't know why it happens, arthritis is actually an umbrella term for seven subtypes of arthritis. Some are very similar, like axial spondyloarthropathy. And the synonym for that JIA is ERA, enthesitis-related arthritis, and psoriatic type JIA is very similar to adult inflammatory arthritis. However, there are a couple of forms of arthritis that children get, which are really very different to adult inflammatory arthritis. So one are the polyarticular phenotype of arthritis, which can either come on altogether explosively as a polyarthritis or creep up over time, so extend from what seemed to be an oligoarthritis, are really quite different diseases to adult rheumatoid arthritis. And I think for adult rheumatologists, the problem is when you see an 18-year-old with multiple joints affected by arthritis, you might think, well, does it matter if it came on at eight? And it does, because the character of the arthritis is different. The way that you measure it will underscore if you use a DAS, for example, and then you therefore deny young people biologic therapy. And those of us who work predominantly with JIA and certainly see it in adults would recognise the character of the synovitis can be really different. And so I think, you know, the main difference is just knowing that childhood onset arthritis is different, and it's different because it's part of an umbrella. And so you need to know which bit of the umbrella you're looking at. If it's the axial subtype or psoriatic subtype, then it's probably very similar to what you're familiar with. If it's a systemic Still's type disease, it's probably very similar to adult onset Still's. But if it's the big group that we see, the extended oligoarticular or the polyarticular, or at least there's just lots of joints involved, it's worth knowing. And the other thing, of course, about juvenile arthritis, it can relapse and remits in a way that rheumatoid doesn't, and it can burn itself out in a way that rheumatoid doesn't. So counterintuitively, often compared to adult rheumatologists, we're often pruning treatment to see whether we're over-treating somebody who's actually naturally gone into remission. And I think that can be quite a difficult thing to appreciate. So sorry, that's a very long answer to
That's great. So you've touched on the different subtypes of JIA. Are there any that are particularly aggressive or you'd worry about more going into adulthood? And conversely, are there those subtypes that may burn out more and are less likely to come through to adult clinics? So what should we be watching out in terms of these different types of disease in the adult clinics in terms of longer term prognosis?
Yeah, so the form that's really underrepresented in adult rheumatology is oligoarticular JIA. So there's a group of children who present with just one or two or three joints, often knees and ankles, which are very obviously swollen and inflamed, but are mono or poorly articular. And they're managed by intra-articular injection, and we use triamcinolone alone hexacetonide. That's where the evidence base is. And those children are managed really well by joint injections, often just once a year. They very often grow out of that, not always by 16 when they might transfer to adult services, but certainly in early adulthood, they've often grown out of it. So it's relatively unusual to see people with oligoarticular JIA, and yet that's the commonest subtype in children's rheumatology. What comes through to adult rheumatology is this quite sort of aggressive group of arthritides, the sort of polyarticular JIA, which is either started as an oligo or as a polyarticular presentation. It doesn't really matter by the time it's in adult services. And I think, and my colleagues would say, can be very treatment refractory. And the problem is that you've often burnt through three or four or five biologics by the time they're 20. And we can talk a bit later about what's licensed and what's not licensed for JIA, but we've got quite a restricted choice if you stick to the NICE guidance. And then, of course, there's systemic arthritis, which is not common, but it's not uncommon in paediatric rheumatology. The thing we're always looking for. Paediatrics is full of children with fever and rash, and the trick is to pick up the children with persistent or quotidian fever and rash who may have actually very little arthritis. And they tend to be either monophasic, they have this fantastic explosive onset, but they often don't come into adult services, or if they do, they're very quickly discharged because they're not active. But there's a group who, just like adult onset Still's disease, the systemic features settle reasonably quickly, and they have a chronic, often quite difficult to treat arthritic process. So I'm always wary of those. And of course, wary that 10 or 15% of them present in HLH, and they are likely to relapse with HLH. And so we spend a lot of time teaching our young people about having steroids and anakinra at home. So these young people may well only be on methotrexate, but they know when they're going into HLH or flaring, and they have anakinra at home to use as and when required. So those are the groups I kind of worry about. And the reason I worry about the polyarticular group in adult services is if they're treated as rheumatoid, they are universally undertreated, because a DAS score, the arthritis has a completely different distribution: jaw, neck, hips, feet, all things that are not measured in the DAS score. We would advise, if you don't want to engage with juvenile arthritis disease scores, then to use a PSARC for, and that's quite counterintuitive for adult rheumatologists, to use a PSARC for somebody who appears to have rheumatoid. So it's just about kind of understanding. And there's some quite good evidence that if you score adults with JIA on a DAS and then score them with a JADAS, which is a juvenile disease arthritis score, you miss a significant proportion who have highly active disease and who need biologic therapy if you rely on a DAS. And if there's one sort of message, that's it. So they often get labelled chronic pain. I get a number of second opinions who come through. Oh, this person had arthritis as a child, now they've got chronic pain. And I assess them, often scan joints, and they do have active arthritis, and they respond beautifully to biologic therapy. So those are the sort of catches.
So that you mentioned it briefly in terms of treatment and something that we can discuss. So with these differences in disease activity scores, how do you usually access treatment, and what kind of steps are you taking with biologics that may be different to what we're seeing in adult rheumatoid arthritis cases, for example?
Yeah, so when I started in, I'm unusual for an adult rheumatologist, and I'm also done the equivalent of paediatric rheumatology grid training, so I've seen it from both sides. So when I started and did my paediatric rheumatology, there was an upper age limit for biologic use in young people, so there was this ridiculous situation where they got to 18, and allegedly they were then not allowed to have biologics. So the NICE guidance for the four approved drugs that we're allowed to use for JIA don't have an upper age limit, so you can use etanercept, adalimumab, tocilizumab, and abatacept from the age of 2 upwards without a higher age limit. And actually the bar is lower, adult rheumatologists often feel, because all you have to do to have access to those drugs is to have tried and failed methotrexate. And we definitely ought to talk about the difficulties of methotrexate in young adults, but for 3 months, which different to adult inflammatory arthritis, where there's usually a longer trial and more DMARDs. So in some ways the bar is lower, however the drugs that you can access are massively restricted. We've always advocated from the research perspective not relabeling young people with JIA as rheumatoid or axial spondyloarthritis, but the reality is, particularly if you run an adult clinic, a clinic for adults with JIA, you get through the allowed biologics fairly quickly. They're not fit for purpose for pregnancy. If you've tried and failed etanercept and adalimumab and you want to get pregnant, then we wouldn't advise tocilizumab and abatacept. So we often in practice end up relabeling or double labeling people as having the adult arthritis equivalent. So I'm a complete hypocrite in the sense I say it's really important that this group remain distinct in adult rheumatology. And yet we have to for labeling reasons. So the obvious solution is the NICE guidance needs to be updated, but it's difficult enough to keep track in adult arthritis with, you know, with all that. So I think it's tricky. I think it's about being rational. Rheumatologists always look for minimum medicine for maximum benefit. And the thing that we do, particularly with biologics in young adults, is we always taper to see what's really going on with their arthritis. Are they in and remission can last for months to years. So people with even really aggressive arthritis can completely switch off for a few months, few years, but then they almost universally come back. And managing the disappointment for a 23-year-old who thought his arthritis had switched off at 19 can be really tricky. So that you know, is often a time when, I don't know, just finished university or working or, you know, whatever. So this is quite a tricky time.
And you mentioned some challenges with methotrexate there. So what are the things that you usually face in younger patients with regards to methotrexate?
Yeah, we don't really understand. Small children often tolerate methotrexate relatively well, actually. But there's something about this sort of immunopubertal axis, which makes methotrexate really difficult to take in teenage and young adult years. And, I have a kind of problem about adolescents being stereotyped, but I think they're often thought to be difficult or just being awkward. But I think it's really clear if you work with young people that they've often absolutely been able to tolerate methotrexate. They go into puberty and suddenly it becomes a drug they simply cannot handle. And it's a frustration because on the face of it, it should be a great drug for teenagers once a week. Adherence should be, but they do often get sick. I mean, you can retry it in established adulthood, and I've got a number of people who couldn't take it as teenagers but are willing to retry it. But it's our first go-to drug, and it's tricky. So I think it's just about being sympathetic. And I think it's really hard to have your first appointment in adult services and somebody says, right, oh, I can see you're not on methotrexate. Well, we'd have everybody on methotrexate. And I think young people have often been through a bit of a mill regarding methotrexate. We tend to start it subcut in pediatric practice. And actually, you see some needle phobia from young people, but less, I think, than perhaps there ought to be, given what happens to them in childhood and early adolescence. But yeah, methotrexate is really difficult. We use sulfasalazine. The group, I should have said, you know, the other group who are not looked after or who get a bit of a more difficult deal in, and I worry about, are the particularly teenage boys or young men with ERA, with axial spondyloarthritis. There's a real delay to their diagnosis. A grumpy teenager who wants to lie in bed because he's got back pain is indistinguishable from a grumpy teenager who wants to lie in bed because that's what you think your stereotype of a teenage boy is. So in fact, the biggest delay to diagnosis in our clinic is in that group, because there is a level of belief about young people's musculoskeletal symptoms which is difficult. And I still hear it really frequently, but children don't get arthritis today. We do school visits, we do college visits. So there's a very pervasive idea that young people can't have arthritis. And so there's a delay to diagnosis. So often what's difficult in adult clinics is some of the psychological burden with not having been believed when you were 14 or 15. And then when you meet a new adult physician at 18 who says, oh, I think I would want to try on this drug methotrexate, it's quite hard to think they might know what they're talking about if you're that young person. So there's lots of reasons that, you know, you need to plan care for young people really carefully.
And you mentioned kind of a really important point that seems very topical in terms of transition of care. And you've highlighted some of the challenges that come with this. And I suppose as you're uniquely placed with kind of one foot in each camp, what do you think are the common pitfalls that adult rheumatologists might be making? Or what are the things that we should be looking at to make sure that we smooth this transition where we've got patients who may be going from a team that they know very well to a new team that might be in a different hospital? What would you recommend in terms of trying to make that as easy a process as possible?
So I think the first thing to say is that there's a general lack of visibility of childhood onset rheumatic disease in adult services. We've done an evaluation in Sheffield. So there are very few services where there are seamless services. Obviously, there's the, well, not obviously, but there is one in London, and there's certainly one in Sheffield where there's a really clear path. And so it's a useful place to be able to get some metrics. Mm. We published an evaluation of the service, which showed that because everybody in the Sheffield Adult Rheumatology Service is coded, you can look at the proportion of the inflammatory arthritis that we look after as adult physicians, which is related to childhood onset disease. And it's actually a relatively big proportion. It's about 5% of coded inflammatory arthritis in the Sheffield Adult Service is juvenile onset arthritis. So I don't think that you can say that, you know, 5% of the workload is not significant. So I think the first thing to say is that probably every adult rheumatologist is receiving patients from paediatrics, whether they know it or not. And so I really don't like the discussion about transition, because it sort of elevates moving from children's to adult services to be something that's only done in specialist services. And in fact, it's done by default in every adult service, I would argue. It's just not recognised. So where you can plan and help people see that process of transition, it should be exactly analogous to young people's transition in any other way. So I always say to people who ask me about this, when your child moves from primary to secondary school, you don't just suddenly switch off primary school and say, oh, tomorrow you're going to a school you've never heard of in a place you've never visited. There's a whole process. Most of the final year of primary school is all about preparing you for secondary school. You've often chosen a school. You've often had to fight really hard to get to the school you want to go to. You'll have visited. There's probably been a taster day. And actually, healthcare transition should be no different. It's very unusual that you have to suddenly switch off one team and switch on another team. And the way the teams work together is the best possible. So we've moved away from a concentration on transition and towards a concentration on developmentally appropriate healthcare, suggesting that if you just deal with that person in front of you, if you do that according to their developmental stage, transition will happen, because you'll recognise that they're coming to the end of year 11, they're about to go to college. You probably need to think about adult services, and hopefully you've thought about that a bit before. So I think there are loads of phrases that people use. We would say transition is everybody's business. It's not just the crazy adolescent rheumatologist business. It's everybody's business, because you will all see people with juvenile onset rheumatic disease, which isn't just JIA, but it may be dermatomyositis. The worst lupus that we see is onset often in teenage years. Enteropathic arthritis, you know, young people with catastrophic inflammatory bowel disease who have really awful arthritis. These will all end up in adult services. You can see that as transitional work or not, as you like. But we've moved to this conception of developmentally appropriate healthcare, and we now have a really clear view on what that is. And I probably won't go through all the evidence base now, but essentially it's understanding what somebody needs based on talking to, communicating effectively with them, working out where they are developmentally, and pitching what you offer at that level. And I suppose it's important just to say, isn't it, that we don't get trained in developmentally, we don't get trained in adolescent rheumatology. If ever we're allowed to go back to face-to-face meetings, if you talk to 200 people and you say, how many people have had, you know, communication skills training in how to deliver bad news, everybody's hand goes up. If you say, has anybody had any training in adolescent communication skills, nobody's hand goes up. And yet 10% of an adult trust work in and outpatient is in the young adult group, 16 to 25. And we have frailty services, don't we, for older people who are frail and need specific features of their care. And we're probably moving towards that kind of model. And then there are really obvious things like longer appointments, being a bit flexible. We partially book our adolescent clinics so that young people don't ever have an appointment more than 6 weeks ahead. They get a personal text message from our healthcare support workers before they come. We don't discharge them after one failure to attend. We have a key worker who chases them up. We're a bit more flexible about attendance and perhaps some aspects of care. We do a lot of negotiation with colleges, with schools. It's amazing what one letter from a consultant saying this person hasn't not turned up to work suddenly because they've got a hangover and can't be bothered, but they've had a really bad flare of arthritis. And when they have a bad flare of arthritis, it's really difficult to get going. And I think just one bit of investment like that from an adult rheumatologist in a 19, 20-year-old can save their job. and makes a massive difference. And rheumatologists are great at seeing the whole picture, aren't they? You know, they're really brilliant at pushing for their patients, but sometimes you have to get over your own stereotype about teenagers to do it correctly.
Great. Well, thank you very much for answering all of those questions. It's given a lot of food for thought, and I'm sure lots of adult rheumatologists listening to this will take an awful lot away from it. So thanks very much for kindly agreeing to record this podcast with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Since the recording of this podcast, the high-cost drug tofacitinib now has NICE approval for the use in polyarticular JIA if anti-TNF drugs are ineffective or are contraindicated. I'm sure there will be a number of other agents coming through under investigation in the treatment of JIA in the coming years.
Thank you for listening to Talking Rheumatology Spotlight, brought to you by BSR. Please do rate, share and subscribe through your favourite podcast app.